we're getting this loaded. My name is Paul Clark. I'm an assistant professor at the University of Louisville School of Nursing. I'm also a system educator at Norton Healthcare, the Norton Healthcare System in Louisville, Kentucky. So thank you for coming to this talk, Nurses Not Be Guilty Bystanders. I'd like to thank the other authors of this project. We hope we have a presentation. We're also hoping to get a couple publications out of this. Dr. Elizabeth Moran Fitzgerald of Ohio State University and Dr. Judy Myers of Indiana University Southeast. This is our disclosure slide. None of the three of us have any personal, financial relationships or commercial interests to disclose regarding this presentation. Unfortunately, we have all experienced workplace violence, whether it's verbal harassment or intimidation, bullying or incivility. But what happens when this incivility spills over onto our patients, when care providers bully or are uncivil to the ones that they work with? This unethical behavior can sometimes even limit access for patients, which is especially critical to vulnerable or under-resourced populations. So how do we deal with this? Are we silent? Do we risk making a stance, but then erode our political base, possibly losing clinical sites or the trust of the staff we work with? So during this presentation, we'll discuss problems bullying causes to vulnerable populations, how this incivility only compounds problems vulnerable populations face, and methods and tools to help us respond and not be part of unethical behavior by maintaining a safe silence. Immigrants have always been a part of the United States fabric, population fabric, and nurses have had to deal with prejudice toward this population. I have to pause here. It occurred to me, because my whole world is nursing, that this is not a nursing conference, and there are several of you out there that aren't nurses. And so I apologize for making this kind of a nurse ghetto. So what I'm going to try to do is reframe some of the language and say healthcare providers, nurses, I'm thinking respiratory therapists, I'm thinking of MPH, I'm thinking of nurse clinicians, I'm thinking of non-nurse clinicians. So for those of you out there that are not in the nursing world, this applies to all of us. So we've had to deal with this problem of prejudice, both within ourselves, if we truly admit that, and then from our colleagues. And this puts especially immigrants in a vulnerable position. In the healthcare world, vulnerable populations are those at greater risk for poor health status and healthcare access. They have a greater than average risk of developing health problems. They have marginalized sociocultural status, limiting them from these resources. They may not be welcome at certain healthcare facilities because of funding or because of prejudice, and then they may not perceive that they're welcome, even when they are, because of their documentation status or lack thereof. Our focus for this presentation is going to be on the Hispanic population, mainly because of the three of us that are working on this project. One of us has worked pretty extensively with the Hispanic community, and a lot of our stories and the way we've understood the way this project has rolled out revolve around this Hispanic community. She encountered many problems while working with this population, which became the genesis for this talk. So briefly, some demographics. Latino persons account for the majority, 4 out of 5, of the estimated 11.1 million undocumented U.S. immigrants. And much of the Hispanic population growth over the past decade has occurred in small and mid-sized cities that have had few or no Hispanic residents in the past. You see the chart up there that notes that U.S. citizens, as far as insurance coverage, that the majority have privately or public and private insurance. This is U.S. citizens. But of those who are foreign-born, 3 times as many of those are likely to be uninsured. As far as government programs covering uninsured and vulnerable populations, Medicaid covers the cost of expenses for documented and undocumented adults for certain emergency conditions, but it frequently does not cover the cost of chronic care, follow-up care, disease management for undocumented persons. The Children's Health and Insurance Program, CHIP, federal funds may not be used to cover undocumented children except for emergency or pregnancy-related issues. Some states use state funding to cover children regardless of their immigration status, but this is not blanket across the U.S. And then the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act of 2010 exempts unauthorized, undocumented non-citizens from the mandate for health coverage, and undocumented immigrants are not eligible for the premium federal credits, cost-sharing subsidies, or temporary high-risk pools. So undocumented Hispanic, Latino, Latina populations face substantial barriers that limit their access to appropriate health care services. Now, the American Nurses Association, in their code of ethics, which is currently being revised, promotes professional practice, and this is the 2001 version, promotes professional practice in compassion and respect for the inherent dignity, worth, and uniqueness of every individual. So, and I assume that a lot of these ethics continue over into other professional organizations as well, that the ANA is not unique in maintaining some of these stances. A nurse's primary commitment, according to this ethical code, is to their patient, whether an individual, group, family, or community. In 2010, the ANA House of Delegates held their position, originally taken in 1958, that health care is a basic human right, that all persons who reside in the U.S. should have access to health care, and that access is unrestricted by consideration to the immigrant's residency status, which includes both documented and undocumented people. So our first case study, we have two case studies just to demonstrate some of the difficulties that some of these populations face. Jimena, and these are a conglomerate of cases that we pulled into one so that we are maintaining HIPAA and also maintaining the privacy of some of these people. Jimena is a Guatemalan national. She's bilingual, English as a second language. She is admitted to a labor and delivery unit of a local hospital for a normal term birth, and a student nurse is assigned to care for her. During shift report that the student nurse witnesses, one of the nurse complains that she is sick and tired of illegal aliens coming to the United States and dropping their babies so that their children can become U.S. citizens. The same nurse to her coworker states, if these people are living in the United States, they need to learn to speak English. And a coworker responds, nods in agreement, and attributes rising unemployment to illegals taking jobs that Americans need. Jimena is in fact a U.S. citizen with a graduate degree and works for a U.S. corporation. So what problems does this generate? Immediately in my mind leaps to issues of ethics. This is an unethical patient treatment, even though this Jimena didn't actually hear these comments. It is absolutely poor modeling for the student nurse. And it is uncivil behavior that borders on bullying. And it puts the nursing instructor in an awkward position, because do you address this issue immediately, respond in some way to be able to state this is unjust and I need to make that statement, or do you remain silent? Do we remain silent because I dare say this is not just for nurses. I bet all groups that have to put students in hospitals, those spots are coveted. And you don't want to upset any kind of apple cart that's going to make you be ineligible to bring your 10 students back the following semester because you've angered the wrong person. So do you remain silent? Well, Thomas Merton, a monk when he was alive, a peace activist, Roman Catholic priest, poet, and philosopher, has a concept of called guilty bystanding, which I'm going to talk about in a minute, but it helps us understand how we react in a situation like that, how we respond. Because he holds that remaining silent in the face of an injustice only perpetuates injustice. Silence does not preserve innocence. Instead, silence indirectly contributes to the injustice, leading one to be a guilty bystander. In a book, chapter called Letter to an Innocent Bystander, he notes that silence may help maintain one's position in certain political environments, but it doesn't maintain one's innocence. It doesn't relieve the person of the responsibility of acting. In fact, silence in the face of an injustice creates violence that only perpetuates more injustice. It encourages a continued exploitation of power at the expense of others. Now, I have to say, all of us have faced these kind of situations. None of us are personally responsible for making right that situation 100%. We are not super people with capes, and we are not responsible for righting every single injustice. But what we are responsible for doing is to respond to prejudice remarks so that we note our disapproval. And from a nursing standpoint, and I would hold for all of us professionals that have a professional code of conduct, we are responsible to hold those around us to the professional ethical framework laid out by our professional organizations. So now we've got the call from Thomas Merton to not be guilty bystanders. Now what? So enter Joseph Badaracco and his work, Leading Quietly, An Unorthodox Guide to Doing the Right Thing. The critical issue for being a quiet leader, which he calls all of us to be in these situations, whether it's in a healthcare environment or not, is to take the problem seriously enough and personally enough to act to stop the injustice, to be tenacious and persistent. Quiet leaders act not because they should, but because the problem they take so personally that by not acting, they actually go against who they are. Quiet leaders are tenacious and drill down and find solutions. In our next slides, we'll talk a little bit about those two concepts. And there's a picture of Dr. Badaracco. Drilling down admits that problems have multiple layers and are complex. It is not about the black and white. As we struggle with complexities, which help to reframe the problem is seen in a new light. And when the problem is seen in a new light, solutions emerge that we can then try out and triage, if you will, to see if they'll work. Tenacity is that the quiet leader is not stymied to find ways around roadblocks. They're not stymied by roadblocks and barriers inherent with these multiple layered complex problems. Tenacity is about developing a sense of moral, emotional, and personal urgency that drives us to pick our battles and see the problem through to a successful conclusion. So let's look at our second case study. Maria, age 30, a housekeeper with several children. She's undocumented, she's a diabetic and an uncontrolled diabetic, and she is starting to develop eye complications. And her employers are starting to complain about her work because she's just not seeing the things that she's supposed to be seeing when she's doing her job. She's ineligible for federal health care, so she hasn't been getting health care. And I would also say, as a working mom, she probably doesn't have time or hasn't found the time to be able to get to a clinic. But she finally does. She comes to a clinic where it's volunteer staffed with through local nursing school with nursing students and clinical instructors. And these nursing students see this big problem, and they start to drill down. They start to figure out how they can solve this problem. And they have doors that are slammed in their faces. They're put on hold for 2 hours with no resolution, so they have to hang up and try again. In some instances, they were even verbally and somewhat inhospitably told, no, this is not a project that this group is interested in. But they were tenacious. They kept coming back. They took Maria's case personally enough so that they could find some resources for her. And they eventually did find pharmaceutical resources so that she could manage her diabetes. They found a church that would buy her equipment so she could check her blood sugar. And they also found, through a local medical school, someone who would manage her vision problems so that they would treat her to try to prevent what's happening to her vision from getting any worse. Multiple problems existed for Maria, but the students demonstrated tenacity and drilled down through multiple layers to find solutions for her. So we wanted to talk briefly. This slide could actually be an entire presentation. I won't go there. I'll just run through these. But being tenacious and drilling down is about finding multiple problem-solving approaches, such as seeking out community health resources, churches, mosques, temples, other community-based lay and spiritual organizations that provide and or sponsor low-cost or no-cost health care, regardless of documentation status. Partnerships and collaborations, working to build international agreements from patients' countries of origins that they might be able to subsidize some of the health care that they receive here. Development of cultural competence, which is defined as knowledge, skills, and abilities to provide safe, effective patient care to individuals of a particular ethnic or racial group. Reading policy, which is a great way to lull yourself to sleep at night, but it also provides great resources. And partnering with government agencies, One policy that leapt out was Nursing Beyond Borders, access to health care for documented and undocumented immigrants living in the United States, which is an ANA policy brief. Also, educating policy leaders about the costs and benefits of including immigrants and members of vulnerable populations in health care reform. Failure to provide health care to vulnerable Hispanic, Latino, Latina immigrants could result in unintended public health and social consequences that I'm sure all of us in here could probably write a book about. So the challenge is, when we meet roadblocks and we seem like we're running out of solutions, how do we meet that? Do we meet it with frustration and walk away, or do we keep coming back? Are we tenacious? Do we take the problem personally enough among ourselves to keep seeking out those solutions, to reframe the problem, to try to see it in a different light so that other solutions emerge? When one meets resistance from those who have political power or who are abusive, uncivil, or bullying, what do we do with that? The question is, again, can you take this challenge personally enough to take a stand, think differently, reframe the problem, and keep searching for the solution or solutions that are out there? The healthcare system can't afford to remain silent and support unjust cultures and systems. Thomas Merton's challenge to nurses, to healthcare providers, to healthcare professionals, and to really all of us that are involved with people, is to avoid guilty bystanding by opening our mouths in the face of unjust cultures and systems, and it must be taken seriously. We must take the problem personally enough to respond to injustice from the core of our beings. We must stand up, open our mouths, fire up our minds, extend our hands and actions, and find solutions for those who need healthcare access. As you can read from John F. Kennedy's quote up on the slide, we must not remain in comfortable inaction. The risks are simply too great. Thank you. I don't know if there are any questions. Is that May? Is that all right? I think questions. Yes. Thank you. That's a really good question, and I've thought about that a little bit because I think we probably could have taken bullying out and used prejudice, except I am completely barraged with the bullying issue right now among nurses. There is such a big problem that we have in our profession with lateral violence, which is nurse to nurse, right? It's not from down this way or up this way. It's lateral. And that first instance was, if it had been directed at Ximena, it would have been, I think in my mind, more prejudice. But that was a violence that was being perpetrated between nurses. And even the ones that were remaining silent were participating in that. And I guess I just probably through that lens of just reading and hearing and talking and seeing and even dealing with my own behavior that's somewhat bullying and incivil. I hate to say that, but that's part of who I am, and dealing with that. I think I just saw that as bullying in that instance. The better answer would be that I have to think through it a little bit more to try to parse out those two concepts, because I think they do stand on their own merits, and I've kind of blurred them a little bit.